Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Hello, welcome to Japan Needs. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is so mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Genki Ito, who is the founder of Tipsy Sake, an online store that specializes in Japanese sake based in California. By the way, Tipsy is spelled T-I-P-P-S-Y, so Tipsy. And Japanese sake has been increasingly popular outside Japan in recent years, and the U.S. is one of the most promising markets for the sake industry. For example, between 2011 to 2021, the value of Japanese sake export to the U.S. tripled, and its quantity doubled, according to the Japanese government statistics. In other words, Americans are drinking not only more sake, but also higher quality sake than 10 years ago. But if you live in America, you normally have to go to a Japanese restaurant to discover great sake, partly because your local liquor shop doesn't carry good enough sake to your palate, or so maybe sell no sake at all, or the store doesn't have anyone who can give you good solid advice on which one to buy. And Tipsy Sake is a nice solution for the problem by making Japanese sake more readily available to everyone from sake novice to connoisseurs. So today we'll discuss how Genki's unique background led him to come up with this successful business concept, and what types of Japanese sake people are drinking now in America, and how COVID-19 dramatically boosted Tipsy Sake's business, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Needs is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Needs. And please write my review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Genki Ito. Hello, Genki. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Akiko-san. It's nice to be on the show.
Okay, so welcome back from Japan. I heard you just went to Japan.
Yes, I had a business trip to Japan. I was there for about 3 weeks, and it was crazy. I had to stay in the hotel for the first 6 day mandatory quarantine, and you know, I couldn't step out of the room, and they served me the same food over and over again. So cold bagel boxes, and you know, and I complained about that on Twitter, and people were kind of like, you know, getting angry that I'm complaining about the free food and stuff, and you know, that was an interesting time to go to Japan.
Right. Yeah, maybe in a couple of years after, it will look back, and then that was a crazy time. So, yeah, sounds like you had a very precious experience. So, anyway, so to get to know you, where are you from, and what did you eat when you grew up?
I'm originally from Nagoya, Japan, in the middle of the country, and I grew up eating my mom's handmade meal.
Okay. What kind of, like a Japanese?
Japanese food. Yeah, I'm from suburban area in Nagoya, and I was living with my parents, and my grandparents were there when I was growing up. I had older brother, younger sister, so we had a big family, and we always get together over dinner and eat the food that my mom and grandma prepared for all of us. It's just traditional Japanese food like curry rice, grilled fish, rice and miso soup, you know, tsukemono and stuff like that. So that's, I think that's pretty, ordinary to any Japanese household. And that's the type of food I've been eating growing up.
Right. So ordinary, but ideal and dreamy to me. So when and why did you come to the U.S.?
So I came to the U.S. When I was 24 because of this job that I got after college. I finished school in Nagoya, then moved to Tokyo for a different type of job. And then Lehman Shock changed everything. I lost my job, and then I applied for this position at a food importer in the U.S. And I was lucky enough to get a working status through that position. And I moved to first Hawaii. That was when I was 24. And I lived there for about 2 years. And I got a position at the headquarters in Los Angeles. So I moved there. And then, I moved to New York and then came back to LA. Then I started my own business. So when I first came here, I was 24 and it was 2009, I believe.
Right. So sounds like you were interested in coming, working abroad, sounds like. And you did so well, obviously. So what kind of business was it? I heard you were working at a Japanese trading company, right?
Yes, it was a food and beverage importer. It was one of the biggest in the U.S. carrying Japanese food. There are actually a few of the bigger ones, and I was working for one of them. And I was I experienced different jobs like sales, marketing, operations while moving to from different city. Moving from city to city. So I can say that I got a good grasp of, what's going on in the Japanese food industry. And, this really led to me building my own business, but how sake was, treated, what the consumer perception over sake was and how it was changing over time, stuff like that.
Right. Oh, wow. So you got paid as working for the company and then you kind of went to a school of learning for your business right now.
Yeah, I decided to go to business school while working for the food importer. And I was studying for about 2.5 years. It was a part-time MBA program. I went to USC, University of Southern California, and got my MBA. Wanted to do something on my own. Did a lot of research and decided that this is a big opportunity. And then, I might be able to, solve the problem that the consumers were having. So I decided to jump in.
Right. Okay. So, by the way, because you sell sake, so what was your first sake that fascinated you? And what is your favorite sake right now?
So when I started working for that food distributor or importer, I was helping a lot of events, tasting events to sell sake to consumers and buyers. And I didn't particularly like sake that much when I was starting. And, I just the type of sake I used to drink was like just really low quality, products that I took shots of them, when I was in college in Japan. I didn't have much money to pay for good quality sake at all. So I didn't have good, image around sake. But, in the first year I started working for that importer, I attended this event. I think we were helping a supermarket sell more sake. And I was, pouring sample sake to consumers. And I, you know, my boss told me to take a sip of like everything we were serving so I could explain to the customer well. And I got this Ginjo sake from Yamagata. Kudoki Jozu is the brand. And that really changed my perception of sake because I didn't know sake could be that fruity and, you know, fragrant. And I immediately fell in love with it.
Wow. Amazing. Okay. And so what's your favorite sake? Can you tell? Maybe you cannot politically speak.
Well, I like all kinds, different kinds of sake. And then I try to drink what I can't, you know, access, especially when I'm in Japan. So when I visited like some good izakaya to try their sake, you know, a few weeks ago, I found this, you know, rare item that's not easily accessible. For example, like Jikon is kind of like a rare brand. It's super expensive if you want to buy it at retail. I heard a lot of liquor, you know, sakaya liquor shops, they don't want to sell like special brands to you unless you have like a good relationship with them. So Jikon is the brand I tried and it was amazing. It's more like a trendy, you know, flavor profile, Muroka, Nama, you know, stuff like that. That's super bold and lively, and it's really juicy. And I like that type of sake.
Right. Interesting. Okay. And so why now, this is a question to, a core question. Why did you decide to start a business to sell sake directly to consumers online in America?
So that's based on from my past experience working at an importer. I've attended 100, maybe 1,000 different events and talked to consumers and buyers, you know, face to face, offering high quality sake to them. And I got the same response over and over again. So they said, whenever they see me serve sake, they're like, oh, I know sake. I've had a lot of shots during college. Or some people are like, oh, I don't do sake. It's too strong for me because it's like vodka, right? But whenever I served the high quality sake as a sample, they changed their, you know, their facial expression. They're like, oh, wow, what is this? Is this really the same sake that I had before? I never had anything like this. It's fruity. It's like white wine. Why can't I get more of it? So I see, you know, this kind of response over and over again and then realized, you know, how come they just don't go to the Japanese market and buy some sake or, you know, where else can they buy sake? And, you know, as I did more research, you know, like I said, during business school, I did a lot of consumer survey to really find out what the problem is and what is it that's limiting the growth of the sake market. Because, you know, people say sake market is growing really fast, but it's still like 1% of wine market. And I thought, you know, sake has the quality that's similar to wine and it has the, you know, depth in history. A very wide selection and variety, and it's interesting as content. You know, like there are hundreds or more than 1,000 breweries with hundreds of years in history. There's a lot of story to tell. So why can it grow faster? So that's the idea I had, and you know, my solution was to really make sake easy and fun and casual for American consumers and make it available at a wide scale anywhere in the US. And because I know that experience of drinking authentic quality sake, that can change consumer perception. So I wanted to offer that experience to as many Americans as possible to really, you know, be the driver to grow the market. That's right. The idea I had, and that's why I started this business, you know, around sake.
Right. I think your business model, we're going to discuss it now, but I really think what you do is valuable because the number of sake brewers has been declining very rapidly.
Yeah.
And I found that in 1983, there are approximately 2,600 sake breweries, according to the Development Bank of Japan, but only around 1,000, some mm-hmm. people say less, of them are operating today. Mm-hmm. So, and the main reasons behind the decline of sake industry are the decrease in alcohol consumption among aging sake drinkers and also younger generations in general, which I think is global, and competition with other alcoholic beverages like wine and beer and craft beer and everything. And of course, labor shortage, because craft sake, authentic sake making takes a lot of labor, energy, and commitment. So, yeah, so what you're doing is that not just reversing the image of, you know, headache-inducing cheap sake, but also literally you are supporting dying sake industry, which they don't deserve. They don't deserve to die. They just have to be supported so that this precious tradition continues. So I really appreciate what you do. And yeah. So, okay. So let's get to the concept of tipsy sake. So what is the concept of tipsy sake and what is your goal?
So the concept is to make sake easy, fun, and more accessible. And we try to offer the largest selection of sake to the widest, consumer, wider audience, wider size audience, as possible in the US. And we don't just offer individual bottles, but we offer, this membership service called Tipsy, Sake Club, where we ship mini bottles, 6 mini bottles each quarter, hoping that our members will try different types of sake, distinct flavor differences, regionality, and we also tell stories for the brand through product card and booklet, so they'll understand the brand and then who's making the beautiful, delicious sake that they're trying, all that stuff. We drive education. So all of this is in effort to get them to be more interested in sake, to find their favorite brands, so they can, you know, order bigger bottles on their own. So in a way, we are kind of creating a new market. And so that's our goal, to get more people to drink more sake and get them to find their favorite bottle so they can order on their own, and hopefully they can order, they can try new sake restaurants on their own. They can bring sake to their friends' home parties to introduce sake, to really our goal is to spread the love of sake.
Right. And I like the product details of each page, because if you click on each sake, there's a, you know, very informative summary page that includes flavor, not just characteristics, but the taste matrix chart. It's like so visual. Yeah. And you have a video and background, serving temperatures and everything. So, yeah. So if I didn't know anything about sake and go to the website, I can just probably pick something I'm certain to be able to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just go to the website, and then how do you choose? Like, I have no idea. What shall I do?
So we have different, different things you can do using navigation. You can find something based on taste profile, you know, rich and dry, different taste profiles based on sake meter value and acidity and all that taste information. And also what we are trying to do that's interesting with our tasting metrics is this is our new feature, but that we'll put all our products as dots in the taste metrics to show which items are similar to what you are browsing right now. So you can just, browse to mix items and find potentially the stuff that you want to try next. And, people can search products based on price range and And what else do we offer now? This is our new feature that's coming up soon, but the by prefecture, and a lot of people, but in my opinion, a lot of people that land on our website don't know where to go because they don't. We do have the categories, you know, like Nigori, Koshu, Kimoto, and stuff like that. And we also, allow for brewery searches and brand searches and stuff like that. I think a lot of people don't have any idea how to find what they should try first. So that's why I offer on our first page our membership products, where you can just start with our welcome package with beginner's guide included in the box and six different bottles with distinct flavor differences to try to find what type of sake they should be looking for.
Right. And so if, that's for consumers. And if I was... I owned a brewery, but I haven't been to U.S. market. I haven't sold anything to America. And how can I get on to the list on your website?
Well, the alcohol supply chain is a little bit unique in the U.S. And the importers have to import the products first and, do their, administrative work with the federal government. And then they can offer the product to us. So right now we already have close to 500 different SKUs. We did, increase our number of SKUs, little by little. And I think we have a lot of products right now for the people that are new to sake. And a lot of people are, repeat customers for us. So they still enjoy the selection that we carry, the large selection we carry. And we are willing to bring in more products so our customers won't get bored with the same selection. It'll be challenging for sure in terms of, warehouse storage and, inventory, the level of inventory that we have to deal with. If there's a good product that's available in the U.S. market already carried by the importers, I'd love to take a look at them. But it's kind of difficult for me to say, I want to buy this product and let's just start importing it.
Right. It's very hard. So you have to go to the brewery to convince that person to go through that administrative part so that you can manage to import. So that's a regulation issue. But sometimes when I travel to certain country, like even wine, the same alcoholic system and a distribution system is so complicated that I had an Italian wine in Italy and I can't find it. That's like, how can I get that, right? You get obsessed with one label, and it happens with Japanese sake too. So it would be nice that eventually, there's kind of like sounding board. I want this product, that product. And eventually someone like you become a matchmaker and you sell. Right.
Yeah, that would be our that's our dream, to make more labels available in the U.S. and to have everything ready for purchase for customers in the U.S. because there are brands that are difficult to access, and even there is stuff that people in Japan even can buy easily. So it's nice to have a good selection of sake available to U.S. consumers all the time, and we want to, try as much as possible to make that happen.
Right. So I said earlier, so the sake industry is facing danger. I really think, there's so many award-winning great sake labels, but I think there are so many undiscovered wonderful sake produced by small breweries. I really think that we need to support them. So anyways, So we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll discuss what types of sake people are drinking right now in America and other places, and how the pandemic dramatically changed Genki's business. So please stay with us.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Needs. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Genki Ito, who is the founder of Tipsy Sake, an online store that specializes in Japanese sake based in California. So you carry all types of sake, from Junmai Daiginjo to Kimoto Yamahai. So what types of sake are the most popular right now?
It's very difficult to say, and if you want to ask like what are the famous brands, I would just can just list popular brands. The popular brands are, I think, the same across the country, because I think it has to do with the availability of the products and the marketing efforts by those brands and the importers. So, popular brands are also popular among our customers at Tipsy. But interesting is that, I think cities like top tier cities like New York and San Francisco, maybe Chicago, maybe customers in those metropolitan areas who has access to a variety of restaurants and high quality cuisine, they tend to order something very, very particular, like Yamahai products and some particular brands that aren't really available in California, but people in New York want specific products because, there are people that I know that are promoting those particular brands and working closely with restaurants and doing food pairing. And, I think those, grassroots efforts are paying off, and some customers have a strong brand affinity with particular items, and I think that's amazing. Other than that, I think people that are new to sake tend to order, lower in price range, easy to drink, like products by major manufacturers because of the lower price points, and something that's really that catches your eye because of the packaging, like the color pink, blue, and stuff like that are also good sellers. I think it really depends on what the customer segment you're talking about. They buy different types of items.
Right. So sounds interesting, right? Because, of course, there's a visual effect of how easy to understand the label, how attractive labels are, but also that education part, because the sommelier, sake sommeliers at a restaurant, they really kind of unfold all those magics of sake. And otherwise, you have no clue. And I think if you visit the winery or, the distillery or sake brewery, you get to learn how it's made and what is special about that thing. So hopefully your informative website can partly solve the issue of a lack of information. But so that sounds like the bigger cities have more kind of like niche types of sake people drinking, not just Junmai, Daiginjo, but something like a more complicated production system like Kimoto, Yamaha, those things kind of preferred in major cities right now?
I don't know for sure. It's difficult to say if it's Yamaha is, you know, becoming popular because it's Yamaha. I think it's more because of the people behind, you know, like marketing those products, and they're telling stories for the brands. And because Yamaha or Kimoto, brewing methods, they're easy to explain. You know, it has takes a lot of manual labors, and that makes a good story. So that's why I think people, prefer those brands, and they happen to be Yamaha and Kimoto. I hope our websites playing a similar role, you know, to tell a story for the brands with all the tasting information that we have and videos and photos, and also the interview pieces that we do with brewers to really help people choose the sake they want to try, because the packagings and colors and all the other stuff that those are the only things that consumers had when they're, you know, as information when they're choosing sake before. But right now, because of us, and we do, have this membership products to really go into the stories of those brands that we work with. I hope we help our customers find their favorite brands, find their new brands, and then make them become their favorite so they can purchase again and again. So that's the idea and Tipsy, and that's what we want to do.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's amazing. So, yeah, it's almost this prosperity of all online stores from big major, Amazon to everything, because we are informed by going to the website, which is necessary, right? Because you don't want to take a risk. And I think your website definitely provides enough information to reduce your risk of purchasing wrong things. So yeah, that's awesome. So it doesn't matter which region you reside in and what kind of experience you have with sake. So yeah, I think your business model is really amazing. So congratulations.
Thank you.
So do you know like age group or gender or any customer demographics you have for who's buying sake now?
I'd say all age groups, but the largest group is millennials, 25 to 35, and slightly male skewed, like 55% male. But I see orders coming from everywhere and all different age segments. All I can say is that 99% of the customers are non-Japanese.
That's amazing. Wow. Okay. And then, but do you currently sell only to within the States, or do you have any Canada or overseas?
Oh, no, we just ship to, I think, 45 different states just domestically in the U.S.
Okay. And are there any states that particularly buy your sake?
Yeah, interesting. When I started the business, I thought, more people from like suburban areas be buying from us because of the lack of access to, supermarkets and restaurants. But, when I started the business, I was surprised that a lot of orders are coming from major cities, big states like New York, California. And, people that even have access to great selection at retail stores, they will still come to us because they don't know what to buy, basically. You know, they don't have any guidance at the stores. Usually the store selection is usually limited, but, that's something I was surprised to find out when I started the business that, even people in the major cities buy from us. And when you look at the the volume by state, I think you see something similar to the proportions of wine consumption by state. I think bigger cities are always New York, California, Texas, and Florida, all those states with big population. They buy a lot of sake too.
So they have more exposure. They're interested already bigger in sake and anything else, I guess. So you started Tipsy Sake right before COVID-19 started. So how did the pandemic affect your business?
Well, we were just establishing our operations when the pandemic hit. And I think it affected all e-commerce companies somewhat favorably because of the boom, sudden increase in demand. And to us, I think a lot of demand switched from restaurants. People were still ordering food from restaurants, but they realized they couldn't buy alcohol. I know, but some restaurants are because of the change in regulation, they were offering alcohol to go, but still a lot of people thought, okay, where can we buy wine or, you know, sake, because I'm eating sushi today, and then realized that there is a store online and they could order and get whatever they wanted to deliver to their door. So that, I think that really helped our business in the beginning. That really helped our push our sales very significantly. But last year, I think a lot of restaurants opened up and the restaurant capacity was close to like 90% during the summer already. And that was, a bit challenging. But we found that a lot of customers that came to us during the lockdown, they, decided to stick with us. We have very high retention rate. And that's great to know. Because we were solving customer issues, solving customer needs, because people were still looking to buy great sake anywhere in the U.S. And then they if they don't order or drink sake at restaurants, they will still want to drink sake at home. So that's a great finding. And so the pandemic overall, really pushed our sales, helped us establish our operations, and then we're not gonna stop here. We are continuing to grow because there's, I would say, like 99% of the American consumers, they've had sake at some time in their life, but they really hadn't tried authentic quality sake. So there's a lot of there's a lot of education that we can do, and there's a lot of market growth.
Right. Well, you got lucky without knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, right. Okay. And business has been growing steadily. Thanks to the COVID partly, but you have good, I think, strategy to acquire customers. So how do you just put yourself on Google? How do you... what's your strategy to acquire customers so successfully?
Well, our primary strategy is to continue to create great content, whether that's a product page. Like you mentioned, we have a lot of information. We try to tell stories for the brand, and we create content piece together with the breweries. We ask them for a lot of information. Sometimes we ask them to shoot a video on their own, and so we can edit their work. And then we can combine that with the stuff we do in our in-house studio. We have an expert to do tasting and pairing and stuff like that. So all of that is to really build great content for our website, and that's our good SEO strategy. Whoever is searching for a particular brand will see our content first. And also, we do a lot of social media marketing, influencer marketing, to get in front of more people with, you know, stories for the brands. And also we tell people that, you know, sake isn't something that there might be a misperception around sake, and that's what we try to tell them. You know, we get them to try as soon as we get them to try a great quality sake, they'll probably open up to try more. So that's our top funnel strategy to show great content, good content about sake to as many people as possible on social media, get the influencer to try our sake, subscription kit or minimal tasting kit. So to get that word out. So that's our marketing strategy.
Right. And you have to, at the same time, you have to maintain good quality sake throughout your portfolio. So how do you select sake? Do you work with sake sommeliers, or do you have relationships with different high-quality breweries, or how does it work?
Well, so initially I started the website with only like 200 SKUs. And at the time I just, you know, worked with the major suppliers and I tried to carry most of the popular products and also in the products that I could source information for, because a lot of products come without any information. It's very difficult to contact breweries directly to ask for information when I was just starting out. But right now it's a little bit different. We have a product team to source information directly from breweries. We interview them. We get them to, submit great photography for the breweries and the brands. So to select our product portfolio, I work with a sake sommelier. We have a sake expert on the team, and she does all the management work for the portfolio. She talks to importers and brewers, get offers about new products, and you know she looks at the our product selection and continues to bring in more interesting item so our customer won't get bored and they'll enjoy to find new products time to time.
Right. Sounds like that job is very interesting. Yeah. It's almost like treasure hunting to get information. Yeah, I'm sure that, so breweries enjoy being interviewed and ask more about what they do, philosophical things, because your website really features the deep part of what they do at the breweries. So, yeah, great job. Okay, and then what are the biggest challenges in running your business so far?
The biggest challenges were fundraising, for sure. That's number one. Because, I started the company on my own and I realized that I needed funding to continue to run the business. For marketing and other purposes, of course, and I did three rounds of fundraising so far, and whenever I do a new round of financing, I just find it super difficult, and it's because it's hard to convince investors of the potential of this category. Japanese sake, because the market size is still very small, I have to tell really a good story, how this will become something amazing, so I have to show data, I have to show a customer testimonial to really tell them that this is something that's really growing really fast, and this is going to be like wine, and I tend to have difficult times talking to investors depending on the background they have, because a lot of people don't really have much knowledge around this category. And it's I have to craft my story differently depending on who I speak with, whether that's from US or Japan. So, you know, fundraising for sure is the biggest challenge I had.
Right. Well, but I think what you're doing is not a waste of your energy and efforts. It's really great. And I think you are in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think the funding is coming together soon, and it'll help us grow out of our current phase and help us move to the next stage, I hope. And, I think we can do something great with our product, and I think we can surprise our customers in a good way with more better user experience and better product experience.
Right. And it's particularly your website, I'm just looking at your website, your product description on a chart, that's like you want to see this thing with everything, like taste matrix, seriously, like really like busy, easy to see, and serving temperatures, the flavor profile, like biscuits, earth, like recommended dishes. So I really like your pages. Mm-hmm. And so, we have listeners in globally, like 190 countries, literally. So where do you, you plan to expand your distribution eventually outside the US, or is the regulation aspect of too big a challenge for you?
It's not. I don't really plan on expanding internationally with the same business model. But what we are doing, it will affect this category globally, I hope. And I think sake is going to be like wine or beer, borderless. You don't know where exactly beer is from. People drink it everywhere in the world. Wine is enjoyed with all different kinds of cuisines. And sake happens to be just from Japan, but it has a similar quality, the stuff I told you already, but it has a huge potential, and it can become like wine or beer to grow out of Japan and be enjoyed by people all over the world. And I think we can, help that, how should I say? So we, using data, we are collecting data from breweries about the taste of each product, and we are collecting information from consumers, and we will be the company with most data around people that drink sake. And I hope to really make sake naked in a way, not associated with just sushi or Japanese food or Japanese culture. It should be enjoyed just solely because it just tastes good, and because of its high quality and its high pairability with food. So I'm hoping to help that type of movement worldwide, just starting from the US, doing a retail business at this time. Eventually I hope to grow into something much, much more bigger. Doesn't have to be just the consumer business. We might develop original brands for people that are outside of Japan. We can develop AI intelligence system to help people match the type of sake they want to try. We can maybe provide services to restaurants. So there are all different ways we can grow into, and I'm super excited about that.
Right. That sounds amazing. All right. So, good luck, and I hope what you're going to do, it's going to happen. I really think that you're going to create a platform to support the sake industry overall, from consumer side and, of course, producer side. And I really hope you're going to do great. So good luck. So where can we find your updates on online and social media?
You can find us on all social media, Tipsy Sake. We are on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're not that active on LinkedIn, but we have an account there too. So yeah, if you can follow us on those platforms, that'd be great. You'll see our new products launch and new features, and you'll get notifications when we release new blog articles and stuff like that.
Right. So again, it's tipsysake.com. That's TIPPSYSAKE. So TIPPSYSAKE.com, not tipsy, like regular TIPSY. So double P. Right. Okay. So thank you so much for joining us today, Genki, and good luck.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatayama.com. Japanese is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Armin Spenjan, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week.
Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.